You don't need a dino-sized chicken nugget for your kid if you're all eating chicken. There is no such thing as a kid's menu. That's something fabricated by the restaurant business. The menu you're serving is a kid meal. It's everyone's. It's a family meal, right? So that's one thing, is you make one meal. If I'm making, let's say, broccoli, let's just say, I'm just throwing that out there, and you know my kid doesn't like broccoli. So you can do two things. You can either make a deal as a family of like, look, I'm going to make one meal, and you have to sample a little bit of everything, no matter what. But if you don't want that vegetable that I'm serving, you have this other vegetable you can always have as an alternative. In our household, it's cultured vegetables, because cultured vegetables are a great second vegetable, because they don't go bad. They're always in your fridge, and you can pull them out for every meal, and it doesn't add more work to your day, right? So that's really key, is because you don't want to make it harder as a parent. It's already hard enough.
We believe that you are strong by design, and you were made in God's image to have a strong body, mind, and spirit. You're listening to the number one Strength and Health Authority podcast in the world. So let's get ready to unlock your potential and transform your life in today's episode.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Strong by Design podcast show. Hosting today, Coach Chris Wilson. So glad you have joined us, found our podcast. If you're a brand new listener of the show, we welcome you. We thank you for clicking our amazing Strong by Design logo and listening for the very first time. Today's episode is going to be really, really cool, very insightful and informative. I'm actually anxious to talk with our guest today to learn more about what he's doing in the world. And if you're a return listener, then you know enough at this point that here on Strong by Design, we talk about kind of a little bit of everything, all things body, mind, and spirit, how you can live a life strong by design, because we believe that everyone has that opportunity. Every day that you wake up, you can make choices and decisions to live a stronger life and ultimately a better life. And so that's why we do the show, is kind of a ministry for us, a way to give back here at Critical Bench, having been around for almost 25 years and the podcast coming up on 5 years old. It's a kind of our way in the business to give back and to use our knowledge and our experience and our passion for health and fitness and family and all of these things that matter to us and benefit you on the other side. So we just are so delighted that you've joined us. So if I could ask one thing, though, at the end of this conversation today, one thing that would really help us here on Strong by Design is if you could think of someone to share it with, this episode in particular, or the show as a whole. Share with a friend or a family member, because that is what really helps our show reach more people authentically, organically. And, we have so many great past conversations, hundreds and hundreds over the years. And so you can go back and binge if you're new. Even if you've been around following us for a while, go back and listen to some of our older content. We have so many great conversations that are evergreen. So thank you again for that. And so our guest, our very special guest, James Barry, he was introduced to me several weeks ago. I found his story intriguing, wanted to know more. I have since benefited from receiving some of his little treats in the mail, and we'll get to what those are in just a moment. But I wanted to share with you some information about him before we get him going on the show. He was a picky eater as a kid. I'm sure other people out there were as well. I know I was. I had like three things I would eat when I was a kid. And he actually ate his first taco in college and would only eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches from the age of 5 to 15. Does that sound familiar? I know it does to me. On the weekends, his family would indulge in Chinese food and pizza. Yep, that was me in the 80s for sure. His diet, mine as well, consisted of fast food, frozen vegetables, microwaved meals. Microwaves were a real big thing in the 80s for sure. And, it really, honestly, James, it sounds like we grew up in the same house. And you take all of that and shake it up, and what do you get? You get a chef. Obviously, he became a chef after this amazing childhood. And he actually, in his early 20s, discovered simple changes in his diet and his lifestyle that could make a massive impact on his quality of life. And he realized the power of good food on his personal health and his well-being, how he felt. And that launched him into his culinary greatness. And for the last 16 plus years, he's been a professional chef focused on making comfort foods healthy again without sacrificing taste. He's cooked for celebrities, for musicians, for the ultra wealthy, but it was fatherhood that actually tested his skills and forced him to go deeper in his exploration of functional food. And his personal struggle with his own daughter's health, which you'll hear more about here very shortly, ultimately led him to starting Pluck. And he's using spices infused with nutritionally dense ingredients from organ meats to change the way food tastes and to make it a superfood by adding it to your favorite meal. So we welcome our very special guest today, James Barry from Pluck. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, you can call me James Plucky Barry, right?
That's very fitting, right? I love it. It's a great, everyone needs a nickname.
I know, right? Thank you. It's truly an honor to be talking with you. I really am aligned with your values and what's important. So thank you for having me on as a guest.
Oh, man, that means a lot. Thank you very much. Yeah, Strong by Design is, I can't say it any more often. I say it just about every episode, and it's really from the heart that this podcast is such a great platform for us as a business and a way to talk with people like you, extraordinary people who are doing extraordinary things in the world, and to share that. I mean, that's what podcasting is all about. Have these great conversations between two people or a small group of people that all these other people get to kind of eavesdrop on, right? But to get so much out of it. And we've had so many life-changing conversations and stories I'm sure I'll never hear about or people I'll never hear from that have been really impacted by what we've talked about on this show. So it just feels good. It's a feel-good type of experience for us, and me as a host, selfishly, I get to have all these conversations and take this information myself. It's so cool.
I was going to ask you though, is it challenging sometimes to take it all in? Because I feel like whenever you're value based and you're trying to give, you're really trying to help people, and we all I think anyone in the health field is trying to help people. We just do it through a different lens, right? But I find sometimes I'm on that journey. I want to help. And then when someone gives me that feedback of like, you just changed my life, I'm like, oh. And I have to, like, taking that breath and actually letting it sink in is a little challenging. So how is that process for you?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a lot to take in. I guess if I spend too long thinking about how moving our conversation could be for somebody, it could almost be frightening it almost feels like a great responsibility. But honestly, I try to stay very humble and just maintain a real learner's type mindset. I am trying to learn from the person I'm talking to, and in doing that and asking real questions, insightful questions that I think the audience would be thinking or wanting to ask themselves, I just try to stay more surface level, I guess, with how much I let my mind kind of go with the grand scheme of things. This podcast is heard in almost 80 countries, and that's not unlike a lot of other podcasts that are doing well and getting tens of thousands of downloads. But I just always kind of try to live in gratitude. It's one of our seven core values here as a business is gratitude, and just being so thankful for your opportunities. and acknowledging that in your work, with the people that you're around, in your community. And I think if more people lived in gratitude, boy, the world would be a better place.
Yeah, absolutely. Because
we all have so much to be thankful for.
Absolutely.
I have so much I want to ask you, but I'd love to start with humor, because I love to laugh. Who doesn't? Tell me some funny stories about your childhood and this picky eating stuff. I have an 11-year-old son and a 7-year-old daughter. I have no doubt experienced this picky eating that all kids seem to have on some level. Not all, most. But is there anything that comes to mind when you think of your younger years?
Well, first off, yeah, absolutely. I have some funny stories. But first off, God, I didn't realize we were so similar. So I have a 10-year-old and 6-year-old. She'll be 11, and then they'll both be 11 and 7 this year. So we're kind of right in there together as fathers. So you know, you were talking about how the diet I grew up with kind of reminded you of your own. Well, here's probably where the difference occurred. We knew dinner was ready because the smoke detector went off.
Yeah, dude, 100% truth. My stepfather's sticker on his car that he stuck on my mom's car said, "Dinner is ready when the smoke alarm goes off." I swear, I am not lying.
Yeah, that's why it's even more of a kind of like a, like my mom sits, she tells people, she's like, "I do not know how I ended up with a chef as a son," because that is the truth. She was an okay cook, but cooking was not her passion. It wasn't where she, you know, she had other passions and excelled in other ways. And so, yeah, we used to dub hamburgers as hockey pucks because they were that they were that hard. I mean, it's funny too, because you know how you grow up is that becomes your comfort food, right? So for me, it took me a long time. I mean, I would say probably like 20 years to really enjoy meat that was not fully cooked, you know, or not extremely well done, because that's how I grew up. So like overcooked food became my comfort food.
Gosh, we might as well have just been seriously grown up in the same house. I didn't know what medium meant on red meat. I didn't, what's that mean?
Yeah,
it was medium well plus.
Yeah,
for me.
No, absolutely. I mean, and it's funny because you shared how I had my first taco in college. Well, what's so funny is my family did eat tacos. We would go to a Mexican restaurant, but I would order a hamburger. You know what I mean? Like I had so much fear around food and that's one way, I guess, to interpret it. But I needed to control my food. I really think that a lot of picky eating, I know there's some sensorial stuff, and so sometimes it's connected to chemical stuff, but a lot of times, more so than not, I think it's connected to control. And sometimes like my parents divorced when I was in my 20s, there was some tumultuous pieces of my childhood. I think my brother and I both became very picky because that was the one piece of our life we could control. You know, you might not be able to control whether your parents get along, but you can control what goes into your mouth. And if someone's forcing you to eat, which, you know, I think a lot of us back in the day used to get forced, you know, you got to clear that plate. You know, there's kids, you know, starving in Ethiopia, of course, because we used to see all the Sally Struthers commercials and stuff. But, you know, every kid figures out a way to get past that. You know, you pretend to eat it and then you hide it in your napkin and then stick it in between the cushions. You figure it out. And we did all those tricks. And so, you know, it took me until I went to culinary school and consciously made an effort. Like, I went into culinary school and I said, I am no longer going to be a picky eater. I made the conscious effort. I said, I'm going to try everything that is put in front of me. And I really did. And it completely opened up my perspective.
Wow. That's so cool. You said something there about the you had to kind of stay at the dinner table or wherever it was were eating and finish your plate. And it just, I hadn't thought about this in a while, but my mom worked in the restaurant business. And so many nights she was not home. It was just my dad and my brothers and I. My brothers are older than me, so they were oftentimes the food preparers. If my mom hadn't made something already, like rice-a-roni sitting on the stovetop with some, you know, chicken that she, you know, picked off off a bird and like put it in there, you know. But anyway, my dad, so it's a twofold story. My dad's meal of choice typically was Campbell's tomato soup with a grilled cheese or peanut butter and jelly sandwich. That was kind of my dad's go-to. And that was easy enough for my brothers to make for him. My dad was a functioning alcoholic, and he had a lot of good qualities, but that was one of his not-so-good ones. And so my brothers were, and me to some degree, were kind of his caretakers at night. But there was one night in particular where the menu was chicken pot pies. You remember those old little mini individual personal chicken pot pies, right? Well, I was a picky eater, right? So I had like three things I liked, you know, pizza, hamburgers, and like spaghetti. You know, I mean, that was kind of it. Maybe rice-a-roni, so maybe four things. And so Popeye, man, that might as well have been, you know, an avocado or something. Like, I just had no interest. But that's what was for dinner that night. And so I quickly kind of removed the top part. I didn't want no part of the pie crust on top. Yeah. So I'm just kind of trying to eat the pieces of chicken inside or whatever. And it's getting colder, you know, it's losing its heat. And my brothers are long done. My dad's done. We're watching like Star Trek. I don't know. It's probably like 8 o'clock at night.
I was going to say that was on late. So it went
late. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Yep. Remember that? Well, I'm an hour into this dinner that everyone else has been done with. It's now cold. I'm sobbing over the top of my food because my dad won't let me like leave. He's like, no, you got to eat it. So I'm stuffing like cold, wet, moist, like pie crust from chicken pot pie, and like just losing my stuff as like a, you know, 7-8-year-old kid. Just life couldn't have been worse in that moment. And it's because I don't know what it was. It's like I told myself prior to even tasting it, I had already shut it down. Like I wasn't going to enjoy this. So I'm already like tuning out. And I've seen my son do the same stuff when it comes to food. My wife and I will put something in front of him that we've made, and my daughter, she'll eat right up. But he will fight, and he's like, "I don't like it." I said, "Buddy, you haven't even tasted it." "Yeah, but I know I won't like it." "No, you don't know that. Give it a taste." No, he's already told himself he doesn't like it. So then he gives himself a little taste, doesn't like it. All right, fine. But it's amazing. It is a control thing. Is there any other psychology behind it, you think?
Yeah, God, man, we could really go down a rabbit hole with this because and I know people listening are probably shaking their heads going, "Oh man, I'm experiencing this, or I have, I know this is an issue." So let's go into it because I think we can really add some value here for everyone listening. So there's a couple of things I believe going on. I think there's the emotional. I think there's also can be the physical, because, you know, someone with like who's on spectrum, texture is everything to them. You know what I mean? So absolutely, it can be a mental, physical thing. But I think for most of us, it's emotional. But then there's also kind of the physiology of it. And this is what's kind of fascinating. So we all have a palate. And I think of the palate as a painter's palette, you know, like where you're getting choose colors. And, you know, if you want to break down our palette, it's based on the flavor profiles, right? So you have salty, you have sweet, you have bitter, you have sour. Well, there's a fifth called umami. And if you think about it, what is the palette of American cuisine? It's salty and sweet, right? I mean, we skew that way. And if everyone looks at their own habits, I would bet anything that if you're living in America that you're skewing that way. And particularly those of us that grew up on those packaged foods growing up, that way, those are all, if you look at any processed packaged food, what is the highest ingredients? It's salt or sugar. And it's because those ingredients are so cheap. And so the food industry, they use them for two things. They use them as preservation, but then they also use it because they pump They pump those ingredients full of the product because it's a cheap ingredient, so they can increase their bottom line, right? So that's one thing is when I talk to families about supporting pick eating, it's like we have to look at, well, what are the predominant flavors of what you're providing your kids? And so I find that you almost need to treat your kids kind of the way you would an animal. If you were changing that dog's food, for example, you would give that their old food 95%, and then you would shift it to the new food for 5%. So it's the same thing with a kid. Like, let's just say you're serving kind of that, let's say what your dad used to love. Like, so he loved the soup, which is sweet. That Campbell's soup is sweet. It has sugar in it. And they used to add that concentrated tomato sauce. So that's sweet. Concentrated tomato is basically condensed tomatoes. And so tomato paste, for example, is very sweet. They bring out the sweetness of it, right? So that soup, most Campbell's soups are not totally savory. They're really more sweet and savory. You know what I mean? But the sweetness is at the front of it. And then you have grilled cheese or peanut butter sandwich. So the peanut butter jelly sandwich is obvious. That's more sweet because of the jelly. But even with the grilled cheese, the cheese in itself, particularly the cheese that most people are using, is a sweet cheese, right? So we're continuing to skew sweet, but it's also salty. And that's why kettle corn is so popular, because whenever you get the sweet, your body then wants the salty, right? Whenever you get the salty, your body wants the sweet. So it's this constant like back and forth. And so basically when we're eating those foods, we're staying in that sweet and salty range. And so one of the ways to start to ease your kid out of that, and you don't even have to tell them what you're doing, but you start to add some of these umami flavors or bitter or sour. And so like an example for the sour might be sauerkraut. So there's a thing called cultured vegetables. And if people are not eating cultured vegetables, I highly recommend you check it out. It's incredibly natural, probiotics are in it. It's incredibly easier to digest because it's cultured. It's basically fermented vegetables, and you can find them pretty much everywhere nowadays. But you know, old school wise, it's sauerkraut. Sauerkraut is fermented vegetables. It's just if you see on the ingredient list that they're using vinegar, then that's not a true ferment. The ones that you want are the ones in the cold. They're in the cold section, and they're going to have no vinegar. You don't want any vinegar in there because if they don't have vinegar, that means they're naturally fermenting it, and those are going to be the most probiotic. But you start taking a little bit of that juice and just adding it to things, whether it's the soups or the sauces or whatever it is, and you start to just add a little bit of that sourness to it. Maybe you serve like grapefruit juice is another one that you can add to things. But anything that kind of skews more sour and bitter, just slowly start adding it until it's now not like, it's kind of like, you know, 60 to 40% or something like that. And you really will see your child's palate start to change. It's uncanny. And then while you're doing that, you start to pull out more of the sweets. Because that's something a lot of people don't realize is our palates are living and breathing. So you can change your palate in as short as 2 weeks. We used to do this. I used to have a meal delivery service in LA. And one of the things we would do is we would get people on what's called a sugar controlled detox. That's what we called it, at least. And what it was is we pulled all carbs out of their diet. Or not, I should say all starches and you know, obviously we did vegetables. But we pulled out like potatoes. We pulled out even... Basically, and any like kind of complex carb, we pulled out starchy carb, we pulled out anything that was dessert-like, anything that had sugar, anything that was processed into sugar quickly in your body, like pastas, rice, all that, grains, everything like that. And then no alcohol as well. So basically what people were eating was some non-starchy vegetables, some good fat and protein, and then they would get a little bit of berries. And in 2 weeks, people would not only lose weight, lose a lot of water weight, and lose actual weight, but their palate would change. And so these were some of these people would be drinking maybe like 3 glasses of wine a night. They could barely finish half a glass. And it's because they were now tasting how sweet the food in their life is, how truly sweet things are. Like, and you know, anyone can do this as an example. Like, if you have a Coke, and we all know this example. If you have a Coca-Cola and it's cold, when it's cold, you can't taste the true sweetness of that Coca-Cola. So you let it get warm, and now you can taste how sweet it is. You won't want to drink it. It's that sweet. And the same thing goes for most things. You know, it's like when you change your palate, you could eat a blueberry and get completely satisfied by that blueberry and not need the ice cream because the blueberry is so sweet on its own.
It's amazing. And I love that. And it shows you how quickly the body can change when you make a conscious effort and you're consistent with something in just a matter of a couple of weeks. And I have real world experience with this because I did a 17 day, really ended up being more like 14 days because the final few days were back onto the weekend when you were able to continue eating like ketogenic meals. But it was a 17 day fast. So it was 3 days of fasting followed by a keto meal. 3 more days of fasting, and then you're on the weekend. We started on Monday, and then like 2 keto meals kind of back to back, but it was like ketogenic friendly. It was like mostly fat and protein with like berries, like you mentioned, as like kind of my dessert item. I lost
probably what, 15 pounds or something?
I lost 17 to 20 pounds in 2 weeks. My palate changed. I leaned out. I had a beer.
Yeah, you probably couldn't even halfway. Finish it. You couldn't
finish I had it. A beer. No, I finished it. Oh. It was the best tasting beer I'd ever had in my life. I never tasted beer the way the flavor of the beer blew me away. Mm. I couldn't. I as soon as it touched me, I was like, what is this I'm drinking? Is this some magical beer? What, you know, I couldn't believe the sweetness of it and the flavor of it was so much more palatable than previously. But I can recommend just we're not talking about fasting. This is not a conversation about that. But I mean, how good it is for your body, detoxifying your body and to have a little bit of fasting in your diet. In your life because of the power of it when it comes to maybe breaking some of these
addictions
that we have and patterns that we have when it comes to sugary foods and processed foods.
Absolutely. You know, and I think, you know, so that's kind of talking about more the physical aspect and the physiology of how the food and why we're making the choices we are, you know, particularly our kids. But, you know, another piece that I think, you know, it's interesting because you and I can identify with being forced to eat, right? And I think a lot of us, I mean, that's that generation. That is what we were all, most of us, were how we were taught. We were either beaten, you know, physically. That's how we were disciplined. Or we were forced to eat everything on the plate before we could leave. And so I think a lot of the way parents are doing it now in response to that is we're going the opposite way, that sometimes we're being almost too submissive. We're being too permissive. It's not submissive, I guess permissive. And we're letting our kids just do anything because we're like, oh, I don't want you to feel the same trauma that I went through or whatever it is, right? And so I kind of always tell people, look, I said, there is a middle ground. You don't have to tell your kid, you don't have to force your kid to sit at the table and cry and you know, feel that trauma of like, I don't want to eat this and you're forcing me, you know, and then have it go on all night and basically make it a headache for you as the adult and a trauma for them. What you can do is you can basically, this is kind of how I break it down. So I say, first of all, don't make multiple meals, okay? You don't need a dino-sized chicken nugget for your kid if you're all eating chicken. You know what I mean? Like you don't need to break up a different meal. Treat kids like, there is no such thing as a kid's menu. That's something fabricated by the restaurant business. The menu you're serving is a kid meal. It's everyone's. It's a family meal, right? So that's one thing, is you make one meal. Now, if you're like aware, if I'm making, let's say broccoli, let's just say, I'm just throwing that out there, and you know my kid doesn't like broccoli. So you can do two things. You can either make a deal as a family of like, look, I'm going to make one meal and you have to sample a little bit of everything, no matter what. But if you don't want that vegetable that I'm serving, you have this other vegetable you can always have as an alternative. In our household, it's cultured vegetables, because cultured vegetables are a great second vegetable because they don't go bad. They're always in your fridge and you can pull them out for every meal and it doesn't add more work to your day. Right? So that's really key, is because you don't want to make it harder as a parent. It's already hard enough. So with my daughters, like if we're serving a vegetable and that one of them doesn't like it, we're like, that's okay. You can grab some cultured vegetables. You got to choose one. And so that's what they do. So it's no skin off our back. But then here's the other thing, is we don't force them to eat the food. Well, like we do ask them, you know, you only take what you're going to eat. So if it's, you think it's something you're not going to eat a lot of, don't take a whole plate full, because then that really is wasting food. So we're really about like, just take a little bit at first, make sure you're still hungry and all that stuff. Right. So there's that piece, but then there's also the piece of like, okay, if you don't finish your food or don't eat what's being served to you, that's okay. There's just no more food after this. So it's a line in the sand of like, you know, you might be craving that yogurt and honey after dinner, or ice cream, whatever it people sometimes do after dinner, but you don't get any. That, so it's fine if you don't want to eat, but there's nothing afterwards until breakfast the next day. And that line is fascinating, because when a kid wants something bad enough, like, so for us, we wanted it bad enough. We wanted to get out of that kitchen table environment bad enough that we would do whatever it took, whether it's hiding the food, making some illusion of like we ate it, but we didn't, right?
Well, so push it around the plate enough, yeah, and smear it out enough. And,
yeah. Kids will get creative. We'll do whatever we need to do to get out of that situation, right? Well, same with the kid that really wants that dessert or whatever it is. The kid will be like, oh, okay, so I have to finish this to get that. Okay, and then they can make their decision. So they're still in control, but they know that they don't pass go unless they've done this. You know, you don't get to C unless you've done A and B. And it's okay if you don't do A and B. Like, no one cares whether you do A and B, but you don't get C. That's where you're very strict as the parent. And it's just amazing, because it really does work. I mean, I can't even tell you. I've had so many instances where my daughter will fight us because she is having a bad day, or something is going on in her life that where she had this idea of what she wanted dinner to be, and it wasn't what she thought it was. You know, it wasn't what she wanted it to be. Let's just say she wanted it to be hamburgers, and that night we weren't doing hamburgers. We were doing something different. And so she sits down and she's all like emotional and pouty about it and kind of having a tantrum. And we're like, okay, we're sorry you're having a hard day. You don't need to take it out on us. And if that's fine, if you don't want to eat dinner, then that's fine. But kitchen's closed. You know what I mean? There's nothing past this. And she'll sit there fighting us. And we're like, you know what? We totally welcome you to be angry and have a hard day. But can you not do it at the dinner table? Because this is a place of eating. This is not a place of like trauma and causing on all this. You know, this isn't a stage. This isn't for drama. This is a stage for eating. And so we have her go into another room and express herself, get it all out. And then she comes back and she eats the thing that she's been telling us, just like your son, like saying, I don't want it. It's not going to taste good. And she finally eats it. And she's like, it's actually really good. And she starts eating it and she finishes it. And sometimes she'll even ask for more, or she'll finish it and then she'll get the thing that she did want. And she'll feel such a, you see the smile on her face of like, I did it. You know, I made the choice and I did it. And to me as a parent, like, that's the reward. It's like, I didn't cause trauma on my kid. I didn't tell her, you know, stuff your feelings in a box. It's like, no, feel what you feel. But this is our household rules. Like, this is how it is. It's okay.
Mm. Yeah.
You still have that control.
It's great. Great advice. And I need to take some more of that myself. Luckily, my wife is the... she's more of the cook of the house. I'm the grill man. I'm daddy weekend breakfast guy and grill man.
Nice.
Like, those are my, that's my, you know, I know my way around the kitchen well enough, but my wife's the cook. Like, she's better. She's good at making, you know, kid-friendly slash family meals, like stuff that everyone will eat. But I do take great pride in stuff coming off the grill, whether it's drumsticks or chicken wings or, you know, burgers, dogs, steaks. And the kid, everybody enjoys that food, which is nice. When I'm out there grilling, I know everyone's going to be involved in whatever is coming off the grill.
When you were grilling, and I just have to ask this since we're similar age, you know, range. So my dad used to grill, and he would be drinking a Michelob. And that was, okay. You know, as a kid, that was the drink a lot of fathers were doing was Michelob. Okay. And you know, that was when I got my first taste of beer, you know, at age 10 or 12 or whatever it is, when he was grilling it, you know.
Yes.
Are you already anticipating those days with your son?
Oh, without question I am. I mean, absolutely. As I said earlier, and if people have heard me in previous podcasts, I've mentioned before, my dad was a Marine Corps drill instructor and an alcoholic. He's the oldest of four boys. He was a pretty hard guy, but he had a lot of redeeming qualities as well. But my first taste of beer was, I was very young. My dad would get a kick out of getting us the mini cans of beer, the little shorties. And when we were little, and he would get pictures of us drinking beer when we were like 3 or 4 years old. Geez, just thought it was funny. So, I mean, it would be a sip. He wasn't like letting us finish it. But so I'm saying that to say this, that I love those moments when I'm out on the grill, because typically I'm in my backyard. The dogs are out there. I'm out there by myself. I have a nice cold beer of choice. And I just love the whole set, turning the grill on, to prepping it, to cooking it, to the food coming off, to seeing my family enjoy the food. There's a whole process involved in it. And I think a lot of men in particular really get a lot of, a lot of joy out of those moments. And if you're not doing that, you should learn how to use your grill and get creative. And there's so many good ways and cool ways to use it.
I'll add too, by the way, if we just staying on this kind of picky eater topic, you know, one of the ways to also support your kids in getting control over what they're eating is to include them in on the process, right?
Yeah.
I know that's kind of where you're going. It's like, so my girls both love cooking with me, and particularly the younger one is always sitting on the counter just participating. She just loves it. And so I include them in when we're meal planning. They're part of that process. When we go grocery shopping, they're part of that process. When we're cooking, they're part of that process. And it's fascinating because when they're included in all that, and you're kind of turning it in, it's like you're almost a magician pulling the veil away and saying, this is how the trick is done. So it's like, so instead of you getting that dish when you sit down at the table, then you're looking at that pot pie and you're like, what the heck is in there? I see chicken bits, I'll eat those, but I don't know what the heck everything else is. I'm not going to touch that. You now know what everything is because you were part of the entire process. So there is no mystery. There is nothing scary. Like, I even let my kids go, like, I'm like, here, try a bell pepper before it's cooked. Now try it when it is cooked. What is it? What's the difference? Is it sweeter? Do you like it when it's softer? And it's really cool because it creates not only conversation and intimacy with your kids, but it also kind of gives them that information of how these textures come into play. Like, because that's another thing, is like our palate is shaped by, as I talked about, our childhood, a lot of how things were made. Like, we talked about how our food was so overcooked. Well, that informed our palate. And so you have to really make efforts to change that. So it's the same with most foods. Like, I swear, most clients I've talked to in the past, they'll say, oh, I don't like Brussels sprouts. I'm like, okay, I get it. So there's two things we can do to figure that out and change that, is I need to know who cooked it for you, because sometimes we have associations that maybe if that was the person who abused us or whatever, or was mean to us, whatever that is. But then also, how did they cook it? Oh, well, they boiled it. That's usually how they did it, right? They boiled it. It was pale green. It was mushy. And I'm like, great. So we're not going to boil this. I'm going to show you how to roast it, and we're going to toss it in some fat. We're going to roast it on a pan. It's going to be crispy and browned, and it's going to be almost like chip-like, you know, because you can make the Brussels sprout leaves almost like chips. And once people taste it that way, they're like, holy moly, like, I had no idea Brussels sprouts could taste as well. And so that's kind of what I offer to anyone listening is like, if one thing's not working, don't throw the bait. Don't say like, oh, my kids won't eat broccoli because every time I cook it, they don't eat it. It's like, no. They're probably not connecting with how you're cooking it. And so like, if you're steaming the broccoli, well then try pan searing, pan frying it or something like that. Maybe adding some cheese on top of it or butter or something, some like good kind of like fat that's gonna inspire the kids to be like, oh, well, I love cheese. Let me try that. And the first time, drown it in, like just drown it in cheese. If you know your kids love cheese, drown it in the cheese. Just to kind of like almost cover the broccoli so they can't even see it's broccoli the first time. Because you're just changing the way they associate what they associate with broccoli. So just that first time, just completely throw it on its, you know, throw it on its side, like just completely alter what they associate it with so you can get them on the side of actually eating it. And then right. You can vary it from there.
Right. Oh, it's great advice. And it's so true. I was always a hater of Brussels sprouts until my wife started making them. Either a roasted or pan fried, and then she would put the butter. She was doing something with potatoes in there, with onions and Brussels sprouts. It was unbelievable. It was like magic. I'm like, wow, this is like my favorite food now.
Yeah,
you can roast it with like bits of bacon and stuff, and salt and pepper, and spray it with a little olive oil or whatever. I mean, it's talk about deliciousness.
So good.
You know, it's the best thing you ever ate. So I love this. Will you tell me more? And you've mentioned obviously your daughters a couple of times. Tell me more about your daughter's life-threatening illness that she had, and that's really what kind of spurred your motivation with Pluck.
Yeah,
I'm curious to know more.
Well, absolutely. So I always, as a chef, as you mentioned in my intro, I was always interested in comfort foods because I know ultimately that's where we gravitate. And so I was always kind of keen to, okay, if I want to help people with their health, I really ultimately have to make comfort foods healthy, because in my 17 years, I've kind of boiled health down to this. Eating healthy food is like, if it's not easy and delicious, you're not going to do it. And you may try it, but you're not going to do it very long. And if you think about that, gosh, it sounds so simple, but it's really true. Like people, no matter what trend is out there, if that trend is easy but it's not delicious, you might do it initially. Like it's a smoothie, let's just say, but it's a disgusting smoothie. So you might do it initially, but then you're just going to be like, you know what, I'm done after a couple weeks probably. And if it's delicious but it's really hard to do, for example, making your own bread is freaking it's delicious, right? It's like you can't beat it, but not everyone's going to take the time to make their own bread.
That's right.
So you're not going to do it very often. But if I hit both of those, if I make it easy and delicious, what's your excuse now? And so the key is like, how can I get the most nutrient dense foods on the planet into your diet easily and deliciously? And that's why I created Pluck. And how I even came to that was, I was already kind of thinking like that as a chef, but then both of my daughters, we had gone to Canada, and they both got sugar toxin, which is basically like getting a form of E. coli. And it's life-threatening for the elderly and for young kids. And my oldest daughter at the time was, I want to say she was, gosh, how old was she? I want to say she was like 5, and my youngest was like, maybe she was 6 and my youngest was 2, something around there. They were really young. And the older one got through it pretty quick. I think it was like 3 days. And with sugar toxin, it's basically like you can't keep anything in. So you're either throwing it up or you're pooping it, you know, or you're diarrhea. It's one or the other, or sometimes both. And so 3 days is not too bad. My older daughter got through it. Well, my younger one was already a very small girl. She's just already very thin. And I was going on a business trip, and it was about 5 days in she had it, and it still wasn't. I thought she was maybe on the mend. We kind of thought, oh, maybe now she's able to hold in some food. And so I left. for my trip thinking that she's on the mend. And I came back 2 days later, 3 days later. So now it's, we're going into like 7-8 days in. I think maybe it could have even been 10. And she was still in it. And I came back to my daughter being skin and bones, no joke. I mean, she was so emaciated. I mean, I'm even getting teary while I think about it. It was so visually scary as a parent. And I just thought to myself, oh my God, I just felt so helpless. I was like, how can I get these foods into her if her body can't keep it down? And then, of course, when you're feeling so sick, you also get even pickier, right? Because all food starts to represent that sickness. And we were finally able to get her, like, she started eating toast finally and was able to keep it in. But then as a parent, I'm going like, she's just eating toast. You know what I mean? You're just like, this is not, there's no nutrition in this. You know, she's not, this is not healthy. And that's when I started to get this idea of like, man, if I could put something on that toast that would just increase the nutrition, but not make it a hurdle, like not create a picky eating or any, not make it obvious that I just up the, you know, nutrition of it. Wouldn't that be something? And I didn't know, I didn't come up with Pluck in that moment, but that was definitely the piece that kind of spurred on my searching for it. And what I came to was like, okay, well, the most nutrient-dense foods on the planet are organ meats, hands down. And anyone that doesn't think that way, just do a search and do a search on the most nutrient-dense foods on the planet. And what will come up will be these graphs. And if the graph is a good one, it's going to measure lots of things. It's going to measure salmon. It's going to measure beef. It's going to measure spinach. It's going to measure blueberries. It's going to measure kale. It's going to measure lots of different things. But if it's a really good one, it will also measure beef liver, you know, beef liver, basically. And you'll see that nutritionally, beef liver will knock everything else on that list off. It will just be, it has so many more nutrients than everything else. It's just amazing. And it checks off every nutritional box. So whereas spinach might not have this or salmon might not have that, beef liver has all of it. So you're sitting there and you see that graph and you're like, okay, holy moly, this is truly Mother Nature's multivitamin. And then I'm like, but no one's eating it. Like in America, we have, it's something like, this was a figure from 2005. I think, no, sorry, 2015. So we're in 2023 now. So this is a figure from 2015. 93% of Americans are nutrient deficient. That was 8 years ago. So imagine what that number is now. It's got to be probably closer to 95%. And so that's let's just say 95% of Americans are nutrient deficient. But we're not calorie deficient because we're also an obese nation. So that is not an Ethiopia issue of like kids not getting food. This is, we are getting food. We're just getting the wrong food. So I was like, all right, so how do I get this nutrient-dense food into people? Because they're not eating it. And then why are they not eating it? Well, they're not eating organ meats because they either think it tastes disgusting or they have had it and it is disgusting to them. So there's both coexist. The other is they don't know how to source it. And then the third is they don't know how to cook it. You know, the art of cooking is just gone. We're so unfamiliar with it. And so I cannot take full credit. I almost feel like this was, you know, I'm just a vessel and this was almost, you know, godly in that I came up with this idea for Pluck, which is basically where I take freeze-dried powdered organs. So this is the same organ, like the same, I'm basically taking the modern technique of preservation. So it's freeze-drying organ meats. These are the things that already come in capsules. They're sold in capsules ever. So this is a product that already exists. But no one had done what I did, which is then I took the ingredient of the freeze-dried powdered organs and I combined it with organic spices and herbs. And so basically what I did was I offset that taste, that ick taste that people associate with, and I kept it. It's still a seasoning. So now you just season your food like you would salt and pepper, but you're getting microdosing of those organ meats in everything you add it to, and it doesn't taste bad. It actually tastes delicious. And most people don't even realize they're eating organ meats. So we completely bypass that one hurdle. You don't need to know how to source it because I did it for you. We're getting it from New Zealand from 100% pastured grass-fed cows. No added hormones, no GMOs. Like I'm getting the cleanest product I can get for you. And then you don't need to know how to cook. Because you could be getting, you know, you could be doing those TV dinners that we talked about earlier. You could be getting McDonald's. It doesn't matter. Just sprinkle this stuff over it. And now you've turned that food into a more nutrient-rich food. You've turned that food into a superfood, really. And so I'm using five organs. I'm using beef, liver, heart, kidney, spleen, and pancreas. So you're getting five organs in spices. And we have four products. We have an all-purpose that really is truly what it's called. It's like you can put it on anything. It's like it's so delicious. It goes on everything. Then we have a spicy version of the all-purpose. And it's not too spicy for anyone that's concerned. It's like it's a really nice taco seasoning. But it's people go back and forth between those two, saying which is their favorite. But it's really well balanced. Not too hot, but then you still get some heat. And then we have a zesty garlic, which is more like a ranchy flavor. And then I put out a product that was 100% organ blend for those people that are like, look, I can't do salt, or I can't do smoked paprika or whatever, whatever's in the other blends. So this is just the organ meat, no different than the capsules, but you don't have to open up the capsules. Now you can add what we call that product pure, and you can add pure to anything that already has flavor. So the other three add flavor, but pure is more neutral and it's just maximum nutrition. But you can add it to a smoothie, you can add it to a sauce, you can add it to ground meat and mix them all in. But it's really versatile. I mean, they're all versatile, but that one particularly is one that you could, like, I even give it to my pets too, like, because it's, you know, animals need the organ meats too, and they go crazy for it. I actually have a video on our social media where I show my cat how she's not eating her food, and then I open the pure and I put a little on there, and how she freaks out. Like, her meowing changes. She's like jumping up. She's just going crazy. But I feed it to both my cat and a dog and my family. So, which goes back to my original testimony of, like, there is no kid food. You know, like, all food, whether it's for pets, humans, kids, adults, whatever it is, it should all be of the same quality. Like, there shouldn't be this delineation of it. Like, that some of the stuff they're feeding our pets, the reason why we're seeing human disease in our pets is because they're feeding them really bad ingredients. You know what I mean? So we really want to be treating all living organisms with the same care and quality as we would ourselves.
Yeah, that's great. I might have to start using this for our animals. We have my wife is a farm girl from Kansas, so she was in veterinary medicine for 20 years. Now she's in human medicine, and we always have lots of animals at the house. So two cats and two dogs right now. But I love the fact that you can put this on their food too, which is really, really awesome. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, specifically the pure. The other ones have salt and spices and herbs, and that's not good for animals. But the pure has no sodium, like no salt, no spices, no herbs. So that one's beautiful for animals and humans.
Wow, it's awesome. The website is fantastic. It's just simply eatpluck.com, eatpluck.com. James was kind enough to send me some samples prior to our podcast today, which one of our team members, Steven, sprinkled on his avocado on like Thursday or Friday last week and said how much he enjoyed that. And I have the I took the packets home because I'm like, I don't want everybody taking my stuff, my little stash, you know. So I brought those home so that I could prepare some meals at home for the family using it. But I love how you have just a really cool platform, by the way. It's just a really nice website.
Oh, thank you.
It's fun, it's colorful, and people can get at the bottom, if they scroll, they can get 10% off.
Yeah,
by
right
plugging
off,
in
right
their
off
email, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, we have a recipe section that really, I mean, I've contributed recipes there, but I also, as a chef, you know, I'm bringing in people that I trust and that I kind of vet, who are providing recipes, and they're doing fabulous jobs. So I can honestly say that every single recipe on the site is excellent. And we get that kind of feedback. People are like, I tried this and it was so good. And you know, that's kind of, this kind of brings us full circle to our our initial conversation about the palate, you know, I was talking about bringing in other flavors, umami. So pluck is umami. So the organ meats are umami. And so it's kind of cool. Like I had a practitioner come up to me at a conference just last year, and she was working with a client who had a daughter who was spectrum and was very picky eater, like to the point where the parent was really scared and nervous. And the practitioner told her to do one thing differently, which was to add pluck to the meals. That's it. And she did that, and I don't even know how long it took. I don't think that long. And then she reported back that her daughter was now eating more things. And I believe it's because it changed her palate. It introduced the umami. And umami is, like I said earlier, is that fifth unique taste. And what's cool about umami is that it actually makes the other four flavors taste better. So we even get reports from people where they, you know, we all as families, we all have those meals that, you know, they're our go-tos. We probably make them every 2 to 3 weeks in the rotation of the meals. You know what I'm talking about, right? Oh, yeah. And so I would get reports from customers saying, look, I made, I'm thinking of this one right now. It's like a stuffed pepper recipe. Like this client was like, I made this recipe. It's a recipe that that basically my family is, it's a go-to. My family always likes it. And the only thing I did differently this time was I used pluck. And that night, my family freaked out. They were like, oh my God, this was so good. They asked for seconds. And then they were like, what did you do differently? What is going on? Like they noticed how like it changed the flavor of it. And she's like, I just used this new spice. But her she reported back that her family loved this food that she's been preparing every few weeks. You know, they've been preparing for the last 7 years, and it was almost like their family tasted it for the first time.
Wow, that is really cool. Well, I want to play this same experiment on my kids too with a meal. Now that my wife just took her nursing entrance exam just today, actually, and it's been a very crazy 2 years for her as she's transitioning from animal into human medicine. And but now she can probably have a little bit more time and meal preparation and cooking for the family and utilizing some of what I received. And there's a term though that's on your website, and it's an important term for people listening to know the meaning of when you say bioavailable.
Yeah. Yeah.
It sounds like a really cool word, but what does that really mean, and why should people know what that word means?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. So when we talk about things being nutrient dense or nutrient rich, so all nutrients aren't made the same. So synthetic vitamins, for example, that you see in the cereals, this is fortified with 12 essential vitamins. Well, those are laboratory made vitamins. Those are synthetic vitamins. And so a lot of times our bodies don't recognize the synthetic vitamins. They can't actually absorb it. A lot of times they're not paired up with the right. So to absorb iron, you need magnesium, for example. Like they go hand in hand. And when you're getting synthetic vitamins, that's not how they do it. I mean, that's why, you know, when we were kids, if people may remember, like, vitamin C used to be one aspect of vitamin C. Now you see it with rose hips. You know what I mean? You see it now with other things. It's because they realize later on, like, oh, you can't actually absorb the vitamin C without these other things. And so they cannot, you know, in a laboratory, they cannot replicate an orange. That's why they isolate things. But they can't actually, you know, Mother Nature does not exist in the laboratory. You know, they can't do what Mother Nature does to a degree. And so that's why I love organ meats, because when I say it's Mother Nature's multivitamin, it's as those vitamins and nutrients are designed to be absorbed, which is bioavailability. It's paired with every vitamin it needs to be absorbable. It's the form of iron called heme iron that is absorbable. It's all designed for our human body to absorb. So you just, it's like, you know, we talk a lot about health being so expensive. We talk a lot about health not being accessible, right? And my whole point to people is like, look, we're spending a lot of money on these vitamins, these multivitamins for our kids or for ourselves. We're spending a lot of money on these other health hacks. But here is an item that Mother Nature provides to us. It's a part of the animal that is already being slaughtered. Okay, we're already eating the muscle meat. Why would we not then take this other part of the animal that has even more nutrients, that would make it so that we don't have to take those multivitamins, that would make it so that we don't have all the chronic illness that we have? Why would we leave all that stuff on the table and then spend our money elsewhere? Like, people, when we talk about, you know, buying, let's say, 100% grass-fed beef, one of the biggest complaints is, like, it's so expensive, right? Well, I'm like, well, look, that same cow, that 100% grass-fed cow, also has a tongue. And the tongue is also considered an organ meat. And the tongue, when you learn how to cook it, is delicious. I promise you, once you've done it, you will never not do it. Like, you'll basically be like, oh my God, every time we make tacos, we're going to have tongue tacos. It's that good. And we have a recipe on the site, so I won't go into how to cook it on the podcast, but please go to the website at eatpluck.com, recipes, and you'll find tongue taco. But anyway, that tongue is more nutritious than the muscle meat. It's got better flavor, and guess what? It's cheaper. It's the same 100% grass-fed cow, but it's cheaper. Whereas that ribeye costs you $24, the tongue is more like $7 or $8. So it's not just half the price; it's sometimes three times as less. You know, so it's like, I just tell people, like, don't, like organ meats can be our savior for our nutrition, but also for our wallets.
Wow, it's amazing. And if you think about it, in the animal world, what do predators go after?
Always.
They go for the throat to take the animal down, and then they go for the intestinal.
Yep.
Right?
They eat the intestines. They go for the heart. They go for the all the organs. The organs are always the first food.
It's the first food, and then they go to the rest of it.
Yeah, I mean, and there are some tribes in, like, the Inuit tribes in Alaska that their climate doesn't even allow for vegetables and fruits to be grown year-round.
So they classify
organ meats as fruits and vegetables because they're so nutritious and because organ meats is something you can get year-round. So that tells you right there about this is a food that is not, it's not a trend. Like, this is something that our ancestors ate. And when I say ancestors, I'm talking our grandparents and even before them. Like, this is a tried and true food. There is nothing laboratory made, bizarro. You know, it's not a Franken food. This is a tried and true human digestible food, and we're not using it. And so whether you use Pluck to get it in your diet or you start experimenting to actually incorporate it in your diet, I don't care. I just think you got to do it because we are chronic disease is prevalent. It's increasing. It's not decreasing. It's increasing. And we have the ability to thrive. And if you're not thriving, then it's time to fix that. And so for my money, I say go towards organ meats because that's going to be your biggest bang for your buck. You're gonna feel immediately different. I mean, I hear people who try Pluck even or heat liver. They tell me that night after eating that they have energy. They feel more energy than they've felt for years just from eating that liver or from using Pluck. It really does work.
Wow, that's fantastic. Well, you make me want to go home and start using it tonight. I'll tell.
Yeah, well, and I told you this when we started, but like, anyone that uses it or tries it, I highly recommend. Don't be shy. Like put it on everything. Like, I mean, you can put, even though it's coming from beef, you can put it on fish. We've tried it on oysters. It's so good on oysters. People tell me all the time, eggs, they love it on eggs. My kids put it on, like I talked about toast being that thing that my kid would eat. Well, guess what she puts on her toast now? She puts Pluck. And I feel so much better. You know, like as a parent, we all have those days where they go sideways and, you know, you didn't meal plan or you worked really late and you're like, oh, shoot, we gotta get that pizza again, you know, let's just eat out or whatever. And you feel kind of like, you know, you don't feel great as a parent. You're like, I'm not serving my kids right. You know, we're not eating well tonight because I was so busy. Well, I'll tell you, I have those days too. And what I do is I just sprinkle Pluck on the pizza or whatever we're getting. And I feel 10 times better as a parent. I'm like, well, at least they got their organ meats in today. Like, I'm good. Like, at least they got that. And I just feel so much better, and it's a win. And that's really what I like to bring to the table, is I just try to show, I like to show parents and just people in general of how your health doesn't have to be a burden. Like, it doesn't have to be hard. We can find easy and delicious things that work, that move the health needle, that don't take more of your mental, you know, like don't result in you having to work harder. Like, because I don't want you to work harder. I don't want to work harder. I mean, I made this for myself. Just so happens that, you know, I'm in a position where I can share it with the world. But like, I truly made it for myself, because I wasn't eating organ meats either. And I knew I needed to get this in my diet too. I knew I needed to get in my daughter's diet. It's my diet. And so I was like, well, how, as a picky eater, as a historically picky eater, how am I going to get into my diet? And this is what I came up with, and I love it. I use it on everything.
That's great, man. I'm so happy to endorse this, and knowing that it's just going to do good for people, and it tastes good, and it's great quality, and it's created by somebody who cares, and somebody who had great reasons for doing it. So, I mean, please, listeners, go check it out. Go to eatpluck.com. Check out James's website. It has nutritional information all over it. The recipes, as he said, his stories on there. It's a great platform. And you can follow him on, of course, on Instagram. Just look up Eat Pluck. Or on Facebook, Eat Pluck. Guess what? On TikTok too, Eat Pluck. So it's pretty easy. Just type that in anywhere you are, and you'll find out more information about what he's doing to change food for all of us. So grateful for you, man. James, it was really, truly an honor to have you. And I had so much fun talking with you. The first 8 minutes that some of our audience may or may not hear, that was really fun, just diving back into our youth, our talking about the 70s and 80s. And it's been just such a delight to have you today.
Thank you, Chris. I truly appreciate it. And I wish you and your audience just all the best. I really hope everyone got something out of this podcast, and that they can apply immediately, because I don't want you to sit on taking care, you know, good care of yourself.
That's right. Yeah, no doubt. There's instant application with some of the information today. There's no question about that. Listeners, thank you so much for another episode here on Strong by Design. As always, Wednesday, we deliver a new conversation that can help you in mind and body and spirit, because we want you to live a life that is strong by design. God bless you. Thank you for joining us today. We'll talk with you next week.
Thank you so much for listening to the Strong by Design podcast. If you found value in today's episode, please subscribe so that more people can find out about our show. Plus, you don't want to miss any future episodes with the amazing guests and topics we have lined up for you.